Headaches aren't just a grown-up problem, and they can manifest themselves in different ways and mean different things in children. But one problem is that young kids have a hard time explaining what it is that's bothering them, and it's possible that children may experience different symptoms than adults do. I didn't even know that. Today, a conversation about headaches and kids. With us today, Dr. Jennifer Bickle is a board-certified headache medicine specialist. She is chief of the headache section at Children's Mercy Hospital. Dr. Bickle, nice to have you again. Welcome.
Thank you.
And back with us again for another of our shows in our ongoing child development series is Dr. Natasha Burgert, who's a pediatrician with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City. Natasha, nice to have you.
It's great to be back, Steve. Thanks.
Natasha, how often do you see kids in your practice who have come to you because they're suffering from a headache?
Headache is one of the most common causes that kids come into the office these days, and it's for a lot of different reasons, and certainly many kids are headache sufferers, but it's also a great worry point for parents when their kid comes to them complaining of head pain.
And how often, Jennifer, do these parents wind up taking their kids to the hospital for headaches, thinking that it might be something more serious?
You know, what's interesting is that we see as many visits at Children's Mercy in the emergency room and urgent cares as we do in the outpatient setting. So we average about 11 patients a day in the emergency room and urgent cares. Children's Mercy, just over the year, last year alone, had 16,000 visits associated with headaches in various settings.
That's amazing to me.
16,000. It is no small issue.
Are some parents overreacting?
You know, I think that there's, you know, like so many things, that there's probably some overreaction and underreaction. The thing is that whenever we are in pain, it's instinct that something is wrong. And think of any parent, even a child of a parent that has cancer. What do they want? They want us to save their lives, but they also want their child to be pain-free, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for a parent to be trying to seek comfort for their child, I don't know if that's overreacting, but maybe what it is that we're not providing the right environment for them to come into.
Hmm.
You know, maybe we're not providing them always with the access that they need or the education that they need or the early intervention that they need.
Natasha, when should parents bring a child into a doctor or to the hospital? What's the trigger point, at least in your view?
Well, I think parents should always bring their kids to the doctor if they're worried about something,
mm-hmm.
because it's our job to identify if it's just a common headache alone or if there's a secondary cause to that. And certainly some families need guidance to that. So certainly come into the office. But I think that for kids who are generally acting okay, responding to Motrin, playing, still generally well, not missing school, a lot of times families can manage these at home with some good education and some common sense. And if the frequency or the intensity of the experience changes, then that's certainly a time to come and see us.
Jennifer, you're nodding your head.
Yes, no, I agree that the majority of headaches can be managed at home as long as we've got a stable pattern, not much disability, and over-the-counter medications are working. And I think that your point was excellent as far as when we see that change in pattern, if we see a child that's not acting healthy, that's when we become more concerned as far as there being a serious etiology underlining it. But this is where it's important to also mention that we only find a serious cause in headaches. And by serious, I don't mean disabling, I mean deadly, in less than 5% of cases. And those are actually very clear cut. Those are not hard to discover. I can tell you that
clear cut how? What do you mean?
Well, what I mean by that is that when somebody presents with headaches that has something bad going on, they're typically also losing a lot of weight. They have abnormalities on examination. You can look in the eyes and see swelling in their brain. It is not actually hard for a diagnosis, for a doctor to make the diagnosis that something bad is going on.
Yeah.
We order tests sometimes. We'll sometimes order MRIs. But most of the time, the good bedside exam is actually what it takes to make the diagnosis.
That's interesting.
I've as a headache specialist, I'm not the one who's making the diagnoses of bad things. Those are usually picked up in the pediatrician's office, in the emergency rooms, because the longer that you've had headaches, the less likely it is associated with anything bad.
The longer you've had headaches.
Yes.
It's just part of your how you roll as a human being.
Yes. And also, I think that what's important for people to understand is that the brain itself has no pain receptors. So, like if we have a heart attack, our heart hurts, right?
Right.
But think of a stroke.
I don't want to find out.
Right,
but
right. Let's just say hypothetically.
Yeah.
But if an individual has a stroke, strokes don't hurt. You know, you have the weakness, you have the numbness. The reason they don't hurt, even though they're the same mechanism as a heart attack, but it's because the brain itself has no pain receptors.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's why little things in the brain don't cause any trouble. I almost wish they did, because then we could catch it as early as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So the truth is by the time a tumor, the sad truth of it is really, is by the time a tumor is causing a headache, it's causing a lot of other problems.
Oh, that's interesting.
The headache is not the only symptom.
Natasha, I read on one of those doctor websites last night that headaches are very common during childhood, and they become increasingly frequent during adolescence. Does that make sense?
First of all, Steve, I don't know if you should be reading doctor websites.
Well, I know.
Secondly,
you guys have told me that before. I knew you might go there, Natasha. Yeah.
No, I think that's absolutely true, Steve, what you read. And I think that's for a couple of different reasons. I think kids, as they get older, can articulate their pain a little bit better and describe what they're experiencing. They're also in a phase of a different phase of life. They're often overscheduled. They're underslept. They have nutrition changes that is kind of affecting their normal balance that's reflected
in
headaches.
Of stuff churning.
Right? But I think young kids, too, might be experiencing headaches more than we think, because they are maybe not saying that their head hurts, but we're noticing a behavior change, or they're really angry, or all of a sudden they're going to their closet and just want to sit in the dark for a little while, you know, and they might not be able to articulate that they're having a headache. But as they get older, they'll tell me, hey, remember that time I used to go sit in my closet? I think I was having headaches, you know? So I think young kids do have them. They just present a little differently, and it takes a little bit more of a thinking cap when it comes to younger kids.
I was going to say, with younger kids, how do you ascertain what they're suffering from, if it's a headache? I mean, what kinds of things are you mining for?
Well, I think it's the same thing as we mine for older kids. We're looking for pattern. We're looking for behavior change that we're noticing with them. The challenge with younger kids is headaches don't last as long. They kind of self-resolve a little bit more quickly. So we don't get a long-standing pattern with them quite as much. But a lot of times I'll have kids, if they're having a lot of discomfort or if they're having some behavior change, I might ask them to draw where it's hurting. And sometimes they can identify through pictures or through play.
Oh, really?
Or point to a doll, like where they're hurting to, even though they might not have the word headache in their vocabulary.
That's interesting. Just to get our listeners involved here, we're talking about headaches in kids these days. We're visiting with Dr. Jennifer Bickel from Children's Mercy Hospital and Dr. Natasha Burgert, who's a pediatrician with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City. If you have a question for our very good doctors here, this would be a great time to call. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Does current research include how to combat the communication gap some young kids may have with adults, Natasha? Are people looking at that question?
I think so. Dr. Bickel?
I think a lot of times, sometimes the children will even try to communicate, but sometimes we're not necessarily listening.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if a kindergartner says, my head hurts, sometimes they're told you're too young for that to happen. Or sometimes they're told, like, for example, let's take a second grader that only has headaches during algebra. Or not algebra in second grade, but math class. Basically, unless they're very advanced.
Boy, that's common,
right.
I bet. Yeah.
So the problem is that they might not actually be told, they might be said, you're just trying to get out of it, you're just trying to do this or that. The truth is that stressful experiences and concentration make headaches more likely to occur.
That's a triggering thing.
Yes, it absolutely is. And so it would make sense that a child who does not like math would have more pain in math class. But sometimes they're discredited before they can even get to their parents, or before they can get to this. You know, so I don't know if it's always that they're not communicating to us as much as sometimes maybe we're not listening as well.
Oh, that's really interesting.
You know, and the other thing too that's really fascinating is that there have been recent studies showing that some babies with colic go on to develop, they have a higher risk of developing migraines later on. So is it possible that these babies that are going through these episodes of colics are experiencing migraines? Sometimes migraines show up more in the stomach in younger kids. There's so much that we need to figure out.
Can you see a headache on an MRI? Is there anything that shows up when you take a look that way?
Right. So just like I said, that an MRI can't tell when you're laughing, an MRI can't tell when you're in pain. So
I didn't think so. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the thing is, sometimes we'll get imaging. Most of the time, we really don't need it. Most of the time, I don't need imaging to tell me that somebody has headaches. Headaches are caused because the nerve cells themselves are overreacting. The headaches are what we refer to as primary headaches. They are not because of something else. They are the condition themselves, such as migraines. And basically, that's nerve cell imbalance.
That's interesting. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Natasha, this was interesting to me. Do kids experience headaches differently than adults do?
I think that they do. At least they can describe them a little bit more differently. Adults can have pretty specific locations to their headaches, duration, know their triggers. Kids typically have headaches that are on both sides of their head, or they move around a lot, a little bit more nondescript from what they describe. And it's also one of the things that Dr. Bickel mentioned too about other sources of the headache. A lot of times it's just general head pain. So sometimes it might be their mouth that's hurting or their teeth that's hurting that's causing their head to hurt too.
Mm-hmm. How frustrating is it for you, Jennifer, as you work with headaches, if you can't see them on MRIs, if you can't, get your arms around them?
Yep.
They're elusive, aren't they? They're like ghosts.
I think that right now you're getting to the point of the problem of why this population is underserved.
Mm-hmm.
There are 36 million people with migraines in the country. There's only 500 board-certified specialists. And wow. Think about doctors, right? We're kind of black and white people. We like our tests to show us what's going on.
Yeah.
So we're talking about a condition that doesn't show up on test, occurs more often in females, and is made worse by stress. So, and because it is not so black and white, because it's kind of a gray condition, I think a lot of people do find it frustrating to treat and do find it elusive. And maybe that's where some of the undertreatment comes from.
So is it like chasing a ghost in a sense?
I guess I don't feel that way because I feel that I don't need a test to believe what my patients are telling me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their communication is what matters the most. Now, if for some reason that that trust has been broken, then I feel like I don't know what I can do. But the truth is that I believe everybody who's in front of me and that we move forward. We work together as a partner to get relief. I don't need an objective party or objective test to help me with that.
What breaks your trust?
I think that's very, very rare. So that's mm-hmm. very rare. I can only count a handful of times that's occurred, but that's when there's been straight out deceit that's been well proven, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And even then that's hard because sometimes teenagers, it's hard to be upfront about stuff. And so it's not necessarily if they've lied to me once, it's almost as if it's a repeated pattern. Then that's when I realize that I just don't know what's happening. Even if it's a kid who I think is ultimately trying to avoid school, I still believe their pain.
Yeah.
What we do is that we talk about why you have to go back to school no matter what your pain is. I don't challenge their pain. As soon as you challenge someone's pain, you're going to actually create more pain. What I challenge is what we can do despite the pain. How can we get you there? Do we go back to school an hour a day? What do we do to get you back to functioning? Because that's ultimately what predicts better headache outcomes.
Natasha, what do you do to get kids to go back to school?
No, that's a great point that Dr. Bickel said, and I completely agree. It's that goal setting. It's that life functioning. It's working together to make reasonable goals in order to make improvements towards normal childhood behavior. And I think it's important, too, for the kids to know as they're going through this that, yes, their pain is real, and we believe that their pain is real, but their bodies are not broken. They're not sick. They shouldn't identify as a sick person. This is just how their body processes stress or a change in their environment. And the great news, as I'm sure Dr. Bickel will describe, is we've got really good things that we can do in order to help manage what they're experiencing, mm-hmm. define those goals, and then work forward together.
Okay. I had an email here from Hovind, or a phone call from Kansas City, Missouri, who asked, diagnosed a headache disorders as a child. Doctors investigated seizure activity. Any information they can provide about that, the connection between headaches in kids and seizures?
You know, first of all, a couple different things is that sometimes docs will order tests, even if it's not necessarily needed, just to feel like they're doing something. Sometimes it's easier than having the long conversations about getting back to school, you know. And so sometimes workups are done that don't necessarily need to be done. Mm-hmm. And also back in the day, they used to get EEGs on a regular basis for headaches. It is considered...
EEGs being what exactly?
I'm sorry, brainwave test, yes. Basically. That it's the same sort of EEGs are what we do for seizure disorders. So they used to get them for migraines, but they have not shown really any benefit in that situation. So, but to get back to the relationship, so I guess what I'm saying is that to have presented with headaches and someone give you a seizure workup instead might not have been all that unusual. Mm-hmm. But also the relationship between migraines and seizures is that if you have one, you are a little bit more likely to have the other. That's the way most neurological conditions work. And the thing about the mechanism of a seizure is it's all about brainwave changes. It's all about the electrical changes in the brain. But a way to conceptualize it is almost that seizures are kind of like a tidal wave and migraines are like a ripple in the water. And so that's why we're able to use similar medications to treat both, because it's all about balancing the nerve cells. That's why we see similar triggers. They're not the same condition, but there is some overlap there.
No question that kids can suffer from migraines.
They absolutely can. So what we talk about as far as migraine incidence, that it's this is very simplified, but about 5% of 5-year-olds, 10% of 10-year-olds, and 15% of 15-year-olds can have migraines.
And you diagnose a migraine how?
So like many conditions, even let's take something like Parkinson's, right? Parkinson's up until recently had no test diagnosis. It was based on physical examination and symptoms. That's the same thing as migraines, same thing as many other conditions. So just like how we have the DSM-5 for psychiatric disease, we have the International Headache Society classification of headaches, which classifies over 300 types of headaches, including my favorite, which is a cold stimulus headache.
Uh-huh.
You probably know what that is, brain freeze.
I guess. Yeah. And that's one of a kind.
Yes. So yeah. There's 300 different types of headaches, but the majority that what kids are going to present with is what we refer to as either tension type. Those are your run-of-the-mill headaches that are no big deal. And then migraines.
There's 300 different types of headaches?
Yes. Yes.
And you can diagnose, can you distinguish one from the other?
Yeah. You know, I mean, because the thing is that there's also different criteria for post-traumatic headaches. There's different criteria for headaches that come after. New daily persistent headache, for example, is a headache that begins out of the blue one day and doesn't go away for years. There are a lot of different, I think that sometimes people think I've had a headache, so now I know all there is to know about headaches, and it doesn't really work that way.
We'll talk about cluster headaches and other kinds of headaches in our second half. But again, just based on a verbal description from a child, you can tell what you're dealing with here.
So a good description from the child and from the family and the physical examination, which you would expect to be normal.
Yeah.
And so that's why it's so important for families to be prepared when they go to the doctor with their story, with what the symptoms are, with the frequency. Study after study has shown that if a family shows up with an appointment specifically to be treated for a headache, that they don't try to do to Dr. Natasha, we're here for asthma. Oh, and by the way, he has headaches.
Mm-hmm.
But they set up a specific appointment to talk about headaches, and they are well prepared to describe them, they will get the right treatment.
Oh, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. This hour we're talking about headaches among kids, what causes them, different kinds of headaches. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. In general, what causes Natasha a routine headache? What's going on there?
Well, just like Dr. Bickel mentioned, it's going to be a neurologic imbalance or a nerve response to some sort of imbalance in the experience of life. And so for some of these kids, it's more well-defined. I know certainly as a migraine sufferer myself, over time, people will develop very specific triggers, whether that's sleep or stress or something that they eat or some smells even or lights can trigger these headaches. For some people, we'll never know specifically the cause, and those trigger points are really hard to identify. But at the end of the day, the management and the ability to work with the pain that they're experiencing can be handled.
It's interesting that some kids like to crawl into a dark closet, which begins to say a lot about how people, where they want to be when a headache hits them.
Absolutely. The light and noise sensitivity is pretty common when it comes to a headache. And earlier you were asking about communication. And I think that's actually where they struggle the most with communicating. As an adult can say, the light's bothering me. A child might often just seem irritable. They might seem withdrawn. It might not be that the parents even pick up on the fact that light and noise is bothering them. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times I'll ask, well, how would they ask if they have a stomachache? If they have a stomachache, that child's not going to go into a dark room, right? They usually stay. They want to cuddle with mom or dad. So I try to figure out how they act different when their head hurts versus how they act in other pains. And that can really show you that light and noise sensitivity. Oh, my gosh, siblings. They're always more irritable with their loud siblings. All that sort of stuff is usually more bothersome.
And are some people more prone to headaches than others, doctor?
Yes. So we typically see, for example, in pediatrics, we'll typically see about 60 to 70% of kids do have a family history of migraines. But here's the catch. Only half the people who have migraines even know that they have them.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't ask a parent, do you have migraines? Because half of them don't know they have them. Most people think a migraine means that you have to be on the floor throwing up.
Yeah.
But the truth is, Excedrin works well for a lot of people's migraines.
Heredity, you're suggesting, is a factor when
yes,
it comes to headaches.
Yes, it absolutely is.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no question about
mm-hmm.
that?
Yes.
How about changes in the weather?
Yes. So, you know, we've done different trigger studies. We've done different diet studies. And the most consistent triggers are barometric pressure changes, stress, and the onset of the menstrual cycle.
Yeah.
And I think that's important, too. Dr. Bickel had mentioned, too, before how important it is for parents to come prepared to their visits when they're coming for headache visits. And part of identifying these different changes in the environment are so important to write down and keep track of, because that's how we define headache triggers and really figure out some of the kids' cause.
Other triggering events might be things like what?
Lack of sleep, finals week, having to go to some families will have where kids are going to be in multiple homes, there might be something in environment, either a smell or an allergen in a different environment that's causing them to react to. So really, it's a long list. And for kids, sometimes it's just the experience of time for us to define them.
Hmm. You know, and I think what's important, too, is that we keep mentioning stress. And I just want to point out that these are not people that it's not because they can't handle stress. This is not some sort of a sign of psychological weakness. This mm-hmm. is not some sort of a you just can't handle taking a math test. It's more just the fact that that is how their body reacts to normal stressors. It mm-hmm. should not ever be used as a judgment against their stamina, against their willpower. It's truly just like how a diabetic is going to get elevated blood sugars from a cupcake and other people won't.
Yeah.
That's how migraines is. So I always say that sugar is to diabetes, cupcakes are to diabetes, what stress is to migraines.
That's a great
really
point.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's go to some phone calls here. Robert from Kansas City, Missouri. Robert, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for my call. I'll cut to the chase. When you mentioned the word triggers, that's such an important word. I will say this, abuse, and then I'll get off the phone. I'm talking sexual abuse possibly, mm-hmm. Physical abuse, mm-hmm. and mental abuse, and that how those are addressed as far as bringing up from the child to say, okay, this is really what's going on, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that you listen to the child. You've acknowledged that, you know, kids can have headaches. So right there, that's a good thing. So I'll take this off the air, and thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Robert. How about abuse?
Absolutely, mm-hmm. absolutely. So, you know, some of the things that we've really seen, and a lot of this has actually come from adult data, that if you look at the ACE scores, the adverse childhood events, when someone has been abused in childhood, rather it be sexual, physical abuse, divorce, traumatic events in childhood, basically they are more at risk of having chronic daily headaches as an adult. What's interesting, though, is that when the same studies have been applied to teenagers, the correlation has not been shown. But here's the problem, though, is that how often, and that study was done with psychologists doing the assessments, but still, the teenager might not be in a place yet where they're willing or able to disclose.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes kids are not aware that they have an abusive household. And that's the thing, is that they don't see the anger. They don't see they think abuse is only if you end up in the hospital. So sometimes it takes to being an adult to realize that you were abused. So one of my clinics that, you know, we see a lot of patients, but one of the clinics that I run is a comprehensive headache clinic where everybody I see is also seen by a pain psychologist and a social worker. As a matter of fact, that's the clinic I left this morning right before I raced over here.
Huh.
And we separate the parents and the kids. The social worker meets with the parents to be able to figure out how can we work to get the kid back in school, what maybe the parents are going through that's what barriers are there. And then the pain psychologist meets individually with the child to assess partially for abuse issues, but also is there some underlying learning disabilities that's making school more stressful?
Is there
an anxiety disorder? Are there other things? So we try to provide them with opportunities to be able to disclose abuse. And what's interesting is that even some of the nurse practitioners that see my headache patients frontline, they have history in doing abuse work. And so it's something that we're very
cognizant of,
yes,
it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah. Back to some calls here. Joan from Kansas City, Missouri. Joan, you're on Up to Date. Our topic today, kids and headaches. Good morning.
Hello. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. I didn't catch that you were talking necessarily about kids and headaches, but I feel like I can listen to your guest all day. My son, when he was about 20, was diagnosed with epilepsy. No, I'm sorry. He had a headache. He woke up one day and had a headache, and it never went away. Varied in intensity, but he had it for over a year. And then it went away, finally. And maybe 6 months later, he was diagnosed with epilepsy then. Is there any connection, possibly?
You know, I think that, so what you're describing basically is a new daily persistent headache that showed up, and then luckily he had the type of the form that spontaneously went into remission. Some of them don't. Some of them go on for years. As far as the development of epilepsy, we don't typically see headaches as causing enough changes to the brain to make it more susceptible to seizures. But when you talk about the relationship, it's certainly there to a certain degree. Like, for example, about half or more of people who have a generalized tonic-clonic seizure, which is a grand mal seizure, will have a migraine-like headache after the seizure. So there is certainly a complex relationship there. But I don't want anybody listening to be afraid that headaches are going to prime their brain to turn into seizures. That does not typically work that way.
Hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, sure. Joan, good call. Thank you. Let's go to Carrie from North Kansas City. Carrie, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. I was so excited to hear this topic today. My son, who's about 9 right now, has been having headaches for 2 or 3 years, and my doctors asked us to kind of try and track it. So I was very interested to hear your discussion on triggers, because I don't know if I was looking at enough factors or whatever, because so far I haven't been able to figure out anything. He's not like dehydrated, lack of sleep, lack of, you know, watching too much TV, whatever. Nothing has seemed common, and they come on very fast. I have migraines too, and he gets migraines, and I just didn't know if you had any suggestions for, other than things like what he's eating, or if there are like certain foods maybe that might trigger it more that I should pay more attention to, or that sort of thing, to try and help narrow down what this might be that's causing them.
Yeah, Carrie, hang on here. And that's such an interesting idea to me. So you have your patients, I imagine, track headaches. And when you get one, you take notes as to what you just ate and maybe what the weather. I don't know. How does this work?
You know, and so what's interesting about it is that this is somewhat of a source of controversy, because there's some that believe very much in headache calendars. I myself, like, for example, we know that asthma can be triggered by certain things in the environment, but I don't require them to keep an asthma calendar. I also am very careful in kids so that they don't every day sit around and talk about their headaches.
Oh, because then it becomes,
right. I don't necessarily know.
Prophecy,
right.
Yeah.
I don't know if I want that change in routine. If you think of just the language of, well, I was a 6 out of 10 today, that so easily becomes their identity. So there's a fine line to walk there. So what I would say is that typically in the situation of attentive parents, and that they've been monitoring it some, that, you know, for the caller who just called in, that if she has not found a trigger so far, I don't know if necessarily being more diligent looking for that is the answer, as much as now is the answer to go for treatment. You know, is there a medicine that he can take when the headache comes on that can help? Are there other things? Are there relaxation exercises every day that might be able to help prevent? You know, that's when I would really start saying that now is the time to treat.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how do you zero in on causes, Natasha, in your more general practice here? What do you do?
Well, a lot of times kids will identify them themselves, and especially as like the caller mentioned, a 9-year-old could certainly come in and say, you know, every time I eat this, or every time this happens to me, or every time I'm on the soccer field, this happens. Asking the child themselves is certainly where I start. But I completely agree with Dr. Bickel's approach, because, again, I want to respect the pain and validate the pain for the kid, but I don't want them to make them feel like they're a sick person. Mm-hmm. And so there are kids that have that are incredible migraine sufferers who get appropriate lifestyle, have appropriate lifestyles and appropriate plans for when they start to feel the headache coming on, or when they do get a headache, that are thriving in their academics and in their athletics. And that's what we want for all of our patients. So triggers are super, super helpful when we can identify them, but it doesn't mean that we can't manage them if we don't know specifically what they are.
Because you're saying in the hunt for a trigger, you might cause other psychological issues with a child beginning to identify as a child who suffers from headaches all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as a child headache sufferer myself, it wasn't years later until I could articulate, hey, every time I eat Chinese food, I'm on the couch later with a headache.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. I mean, that was certainly one of those triggers, but my parents did a wonderful job of helping me when I had a headache, but it wasn't until I got older and could identify that with myself and my own experience of life that becomes identified. I never want my parents to think that they're not doing a good job if they don't identify what it is in order to prevent it, because that's not always possible and it's not always needed.
Yeah. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our topic today, kids and headaches, how to treat them, what causes them, all those kinds of things. Let's go back to some calls in. Renee from Kansas City, Missouri. Renee, thanks for holding on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you. I had my first full-blown classical migraine when I was 12 years old, and this was like back in the 80s, and 70s. Anyway. At the time, what they did was essentially just treat me by giving painkillers. And I know they've made a lot of advances since then, but I was fine. I mean, I'd have them periodically. They'd give me Demerol, and I'd sleep for a day, and then I'd, you know, be okay. But when I moved to Kansas City to go to grad school, I had my first migraine up here, and I did not have a primary care physician, so then boyfriend took me to the emergency room, where they proceeded to treat me like I was a drug addict. Because I was telling, please give me painkillers. And, what I'm wondering, my actual question is, I know they have cards that they give to people who've had implants, or to people who do suffer from diabetes or something like that, or do they do anything like that with kids these days or with young people? Because just to be to be someplace strange and go in, and even if you have the aura and are throwing up in the whole nine yards, you can still be treated like you're just seeking drugs.
Hmm.
You know, and
so is there anything like that?
Yeah, Renee.
This is another just absolutely heartbreaking but not unusual story. And this is where our biases come in. You know, Steve, you asked earlier as far as, is it frustrating treating, people when you don't have that test? And the thing is that it is frustrating. And so sometimes that means that people's pain levels are judged by how they look. Sadly, African-Americans get less pain medications than whites do. And it's just that inherent bias. And so one of the things, you know, if you think about the saying, I feel your pain, I see your pain, I hear your pain. The truth is that if the provider doesn't do that, then they don't treat. Mm-hmm. If they don't feel your pain enough, if they don't believe you enough. And so I can tell you, even in those situations when, first of all, you know, narcotics are really not great to use for headaches. I'll say that they can actually make things worse. But the issue as far as not being believed and not getting treatments, I have written letters before, and I still have been basically told that I've been duped by somebody, which is really kind of irritating and frustrating. But what we do from a pediatric standpoint is that this is why our social worker is so important, is that we do write letters. As a matter of fact, we've got a website where pediatricians can just click a few buttons and provide a letter for the kid to take to school so that the school knows that this is a child that does have migraines, mm-hmm. is under our treatment, and maybe they need a 504 plan. Maybe that way that it doesn't have to rely upon if this teacher believes them or if this teacher doesn't believe them, you know, because I think all of us want the same thing. We want these children functioning better. We want them doing better. So we do try to give them that diagnosis while at the same time not saying a carte blanche kind of never go to school, don't worry about it.
Dr. Burgert, I'm just wondering about this idea of remedies, which we haven't talked a whole lot about. You know, once you get past two aspirin, okay, what are some of the more common, maybe over-the-counter remedies that people might want to consider for a child who suffers regularly from headaches, acknowledging, I guess, that we don't really quite know what any one kid's suffering from, but what might people want to think about?
No, that's a great question. First, no aspirin in kids.
Okay. Is that right?
Yes, no aspirin in kids.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And Motrin's on aspirin? Is that?
Motrin is okay. Actually, Motrin is going to be preferred. But old aspirin, we usually keep away from our kids until they get a little bit older.
How old you got to be?
18, typically.
Is that right?
Yes.
Because?
Because of the association of aspirin and Reye syndrome, which is a condition that happens in kids when they get aspirin.
Nothing's simple anymore. Okay.
Well, you know what?
Yeah.
But back to your question, Steve, which I think is a great one. And I think that comes back a little bit of that answer comes back to maybe more questions. And that is, I always start really broadly. Tell me a little bit about what's going on. How can we make sure that we can keep your body in as best healthy balance as we can? And by that, I mean good sleep, regular sleep, making sure we're eating three meals a day, which is not always easy for my busy teenagers.
So the basics are really important.
Yeah, basics.
Here.
Are you getting some exercise? Making sure that you're not you're not overscheduled, which is easier said than done. Making sure that you're not having increased stress by having some vision changes that we haven't identified. Just like some really basic things. Another thing that I really like my kids to do too is make sure that they're hydrated, especially my athletes. Kids will get headaches when they don't have enough hydration, and so these are the kiddos that I will write letters for, so they can have water bottles at school and stuff like that. And simple interventions like that are often helpful. When kids do get headaches, I prefer that they take a weight-appropriate dose of ibuprofen. For headaches, it seems to work a little bit better than acetaminophen. Dr. Begley, mm-hmm. You can correct
yes.
me if that's wrong. Okay. And
what's the difference between aspirin and ibuprofen?
Between acetaminophen and ibuprofen, or aspirin and ibuprofen?
Aspirin and ibuprofen.
Aspirin and ibuprofen, they're going to be having just different, they're going to be working on different hormone pathways, essentially, in order to block pain or fever.
Mm-hmm.
So there's subtle differences between your aspirins and between your naproxens and between your acetaminophens and your ibuprofens. For headaches specifically, though, ibuprofen, Motrin, Advil, those are the ones that we're going to prefer as first line. And I always recommend kids too, if you get a headache, you want to take it as soon as possible. So these are the kiddos that I might write a note so they have it at school. So if they're getting a headache at school, they can go to the nurse right away.
You want to nip it in the bud.
Because if that is going to be a great window of treatment to decrease the duration of that pain experience.
Okay.
If you wait too long, you kind of get behind the eight ball and you can't go any further. You know, we talk about biofeedback, we talk about stress reliever, we talk about for some kids daily pain controls, for sometimes nutraceuticals or supplements. But I think that really for most kids, the 90% of my kids that come in with talking about, hey, your lifestyle's maybe catching up with you a little
bit,
and making concerted efforts, not only for that child, but as a family, you can get some good relief.
So
and we don't have to lean into our specialists like Dr. Bickle.
It's self-correcting as opposed to having to take a pill for it.
Exactly.
So often.
Exactly. I really don't want my kids to take pills unless they really have to, certainly not daily ones. But if they are having a headache, they deserve ibuprofen. And so they do deserve pain control if they're experiencing that.
But people want a pill, Jennifer, these
yes,
days. That's what
yes.
they want. They come to see you
no,
for the magic little
right.
little
right.
thing there, yeah.
And so that's why sometimes people don't like me.
Because you say no.
Sometimes. It's not that I'll refuse the pill, but what I'll say is that I don't know how much this is going to work until this goes against, until you also do A, B, and C. So I push the fact that we're partners. I say by not sleeping and not drinking water, you're basically banging your head against the wall and saying, help me.
Yeah.
And so I still will partner with them. But I let them know that there's limits to how much we'll be able to do.
Mm. Is there a good website where folks who have questions might want to go look about headaches?
Yeah, so we actually created a website, headachereliefguide.com, and it's really geared towards teenagers in middle school and high schoolers. We have released it into the schools as well to be able to give them education early up front. It has a video. It has relaxation exercises.
Headachereliefguide.com.
Yes.
And it's Children's Mercy Hospital related?
We developed it, yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Sounds good. I want to thank Dr. Natasha Berger. Burgert again for coming back. One of our shows in our child development series. She's with Pediatric Associates in Kansas City. Dr. Jennifer Bickle, who's a board-certified headache medicine specialist over at Children's Mercy Hospital. You guys were great. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Steve.